WTF is Retail, presented by Knotted Commerce, the integration specialists for growing retail brands.
Welcome back to the WTF is Retail podcast. Today we're joined by Loon, the founder of skincare and supplement brand. Get that right this time. Monday Muse. How are you doing, Loon?
Good. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us. I'm here with Theo again, per usual. I just thought we'd get stuck into it. I'm really excited to be chatting with you about your journey. I know it's been quite a personal journey into like the growth and the development of the brand. To kick things off, it kind of feels fitting to ask you, how was Monday Muse founded? Why was it founded? And just give us a bit of a backstory to get going.
Yeah, that's right. Monday Muse is a very personal journey. I am someone really who has dealt with a lot of skin issues throughout my entire life. I remember even as a child, always being at the dermatologist's office with my mom. I had, rashes, eczema and whatnot, I think if you're someone who's prone to that, you're probably someone who's always going to have to manage, dealing with skin issues, which again, a few years later, resulted in acne as a teenager, which wasn't ideal. But when you're a teenager, you look around and everyone kind of looks like
everyone has
pimply.
Yeah, I know I did.
Yeah. So you look around and you accept that this is just what you're dealing with.
Big time.
When you are in your early 20s in university, you very often feel like, I should have grown out of this. Mm-hmm. Why is my skin flaring up all of a sudden? And that's what happened to me in university. At 21 years old, I one day just woke up, looked in the mirror, and my skin was very inflamed, rashy, and the breakouts, with time started to become more severe. So I did what probably everyone does. You run to the store, you try to grab all the anti-acne products, mm-hmm. Didn't work, went to my doctor, a dermatologist, got the prescription cream, got a few rounds of antibiotics, which always helped temporarily, I will say. So it wasn't a long-term solution. It really was until the stage of where my doctor said, you need to go on Accutane, mm-hmm. that I thought, okay, no, I'm going to take matters into my own hands. I'm not going to do Accutane. I was a little bit worried about all the side effects and all the things that I've heard.
Just for the listeners and also for me, what is Accutane?
Yeah, Accutane is a good point. If you're in the world of skin, then you know what it is, especially if you deal with breakouts. Accutane is a prescription medication. It's a very high dose of vitamin A, essentially, which is very effective in combating severe acne. The side effects, however, are quite intense. So, for example, if you're a woman, you need to be on birth control, because if you do get pregnant whilst on this medication, your baby can have birth defects. Mm-hmm. You cannot drink alcohol. It's quite a long procedure. Very often you have to go on it for 6 to 8 months. Mm. And one of my best friends actually went on it several times because her acne kept on coming back. So I looked at her and I thought, oh, I don't know if I, I don't know.
Is it worth it, right? Like you're going to potentially have to go through it multiple times, yeah.
Yeah, so pros and cons. I thought, let me generally just try to figure this out myself. Let me do some really, research, deep understanding of trying to figure out what's going on here. It took a while. It took nearly 4 years to clear my skin up. It wasn't an easy fix, also because it's so personal and individual. Mm-hmm. When you deal with stubborn skin issues, it can vary from person to person what kind of the root cause is. Yeah. And basically figured out what worked for my skin with time. And that became the inspiration for Monday Muse. So it is a very personal journey that resulted into the brand, which is why I also started it kind of straight out of university. I did my bachelor's degree, my master's, and then started working on the brand, which is interesting in hindsight because I really didn't know what I was getting myself into. Mm. But I was very passionate about how products are formulated, which is also why our tagline is skin solutions for not so well-behaved skin. Our philosophy is taking a much more gentle approach to the skin, as well as an inside-out approach, which is why we have skincare and now supplements, because that's ultimately what really cleared my own skin.
Yep.
So I got a diploma in skincare formulating because I wanted to understand a little bit how, you know, how's this cream made? What goes into it? So I did that, which gave a good foundation of, you know, basic understanding. It's not a chemistry degree by any means. I found my chemist, cosmetic chemist here in London, who I still work with to this day. I also work with a nutritionist on creating formulas for the supplements. So we can really, you know, deep dive into the ingredients that we want to add, whatever we want to leave out, we can leave out. We try to minimize the risk of irritation as much as possible, because I just see that that works very well for so many people, especially if you have, you know, sensitive skin or blemish-prone skin, eczema-prone skin. You can't just use everything and anything out there.
Yep.
You have to be a little bit, you know, specific and find something that agrees with your skin. So that's how we kind of target our, that's kind of our philosophy when it comes to formulating, taking a more gentle approach, focusing on quality of ingredients, which is a whole other, you know, can of worms we can go into. And then, yeah, just also stripping it back, making things not too complicated, not too many steps in your routine. That can sometimes also be a culprit.
Yeah, big time.
I'd like to take a second to thank our season 4 sponsor, Cubix Media. Cubix are a Shopify agency and Shopify Plus partner that specializes in crafting beautiful and reliable web stores. If you're a brand looking for Shopify services, replatforming, development, or e-com strategy, then head over to Cubix Media. Let's get back into the podcast.
And I guess, like, that sounds like quite a difficult journey at the beginning anyway, to figure everything out from a product perspective, finding the right people to advise you in certain areas that you might not have the full expertise. But it sounds like you've learned a lot along the way. What were some of the other, like, initial challenges in the early years of Monday Muse? It was founded in 2021, right? So especially in that first sort of year.
Yeah.
What was happening in the world? What made it really difficult to go to market?
Well, what was happening in the world? COVID, obviously, was still in full swing. I started working on the brand probably a year prior, or even more, actually. That it was actually prior to COVID that I started working on the brand. Mm-hmm. And I think there were many challenges. I can kind of group it all together into just pure lack of knowledge, know-how, industry connections. I really had no idea about this industry whatsoever. I was just someone with a problem, trying to figure it out, trying to find a solution and sharing that with other people. So that was, I think, one big challenge in and of itself, in hindsight.
You were doing this completely by yourself, right? Like,
yeah.
You didn't have like a mate or nothing. Was there someone like who you tried to like bounce ideas off or like, you know, proof check things or?
Not really, no. I remember calling my dad one day saying, I have this idea. What do you think? And he really encouraged me. He was the one that said, yeah, this sounds great. Yeah, you have to do this. It's a great business model. Yeah, yeah. So with that encouragement, I started sort of researching. I got the diploma in skincare formulating, which is very helpful. Mm. Just, again, basic foundations of not just formula, but also how to get a product to market. There are so many cosmetic regulations.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Especially in the UK and EU, they're the strictest in the world.
Really?
So you have to really be careful and do everything correctly here, which it's quite complex. Once you have the information, once you understand it, it's fine. But I had no idea about any of that. But also on the flip side, just how do you create a website? Mm. How are you going to sell products? You know, figuring out, watching so many YouTube videos on how to set up your store. I had no idea about, you know, conversion rate optimization was not at all on my mind. I was just really focused on creating a really good product, trying to launch it. And I do also distinctly remember when I did eventually go live, I thought, oh my gosh, how am I going to sell these 1,000 yep. face oils that I have now? I actually hadn't thought about that at all.
Oh, so you made a bunch of products before going live, right? So you just had it in stock. And like when you went live, was the plan like social media? Do you think social media was going to drive traffic? Yeah. Or?
I mean, it was COVID, so everyone's on their phone. Everyone was on social media. So that was 100% part of the strategy. I did start posting maybe even 6 months before we even launched, just, mm-hmm. you know, trying to get connections with micro-influencers in the space. So there was, you know, some strategy, but mm-hmm. it wasn't like a fully fledged plan. I think that for me, just, yeah, getting to the point of launching a product is such an uphill battle, you know, finding my manufacturer, finding someone who wanted to make those quantities for me, mm-hmm. finding my chemist to make the products with, doing all the regulatory testing around that, which in and of itself takes 4 months.
Yeah.
Packaging, designing of the packaging. It feels like such a huge, again, mountain to climb. But then I realized there's an even bigger mountain to climb, which is you got to sell this.
Yeah.
You got to make your business commercially viable. Mm. And yeah. Cash flow, you know,
yeah.
profit and loss, that all started to then become quite a big 100%. Reality.
I'm quite intrigued to like, when you first launched Monday Muse, like, what was the reaction? Like, how quick did you turn live and like just like tumbleweeds went across? Or like, was it?
Yeah. No, I think, okay, so I remember the first day we went live, we sold 10 units.
Oh, nice.
It's not a bad first That's day, honestly.
I think it's like, oh, cute, but like yeah. not, it again, it wasn't, I think so differently now. Yeah. I think I've learned so much over the years, but back then, yeah, that was nice. That was a good start. Of course, half of it was probably family
sure.
and friends. I had many days where I wasn't selling any product, and it really was, you know, I'd made the products with my manufacturer and I had all the boxes kind of in my home
mm-hmm.
and I was packing the orders myself. And after a few months, I did think, this is not the best use of my time. So found a solution for that. But it was just very slow burn. I also launched with one product, partly because I didn't have the cash. I didn't have, you know, the funds. I didn't raise any money. So it was all done extremely bootstrapped.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, with one product, you know, you don't really have a skincare range. So that was sort of the next step to launch the second one. But you need to, you know, generate revenue to be able to afford the inventory. I also completely didn't think about, I didn't even know what an MOQ, what the term mm-hmm. meant. And in the skincare or just beauty in general, cosmetics, they're very high. You cannot just start with a couple hundred units and then sell and see how it goes. You have to, I think now, I was lucky that my manufacturer wanted to agree on a run of 1,000 units. But now I think anything under a few thousand units is impossible.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden I thought, oh, there's a, you know, big chunk of cash is going towards inventory.
It's sitting in your house.
Yeah.
There's, to be honest, like you, the question was around challenge, right? And I love, one of the reasons I'm happy to have you on the podcast is because you mentioned like actually the lack of expertise being a challenge. But I think actually you've described it kind of turning into your superpower, because what we're hearing come through is around kind of the graft and picking up all these things and then realizing, well, this is not the best use of my time, figuring out how I can give it to someone else. Like learning all these things along the way. I know myself, having tried to start a business, it's hard as hell, let alone when you have to put the like cash down for a minimum order, right? So congrats, really love it. But I think like that's really inspiring to see the sort of coming from nothing, not knowing the skincare industry at all, right? And actually building something for yourself at the end of the day, which actually I think, you mentioned having one product not being like a long-term strategy maybe, but we do see it even nowadays, like the hero product and then building a range around it. I don't think it's that uncommon, even with like really high performing brands to have a really strong product that they go to market with and lead with, right? So you kind of figured all that out yourself.
Yeah. And you do naturally see within your range. Of course, I think all my products are, every SKU is a hero.
They're all heroes.
But the customer will decide ultimately, and you do have to focus on, like, you know, your top two or three products. I do think with skincare, you could have one or two SKUs and really lean into that, but because it's very step oriented in general. People usually wear more than one or use more than one skincare product. So it made sense to have more. Also, from a retail perspective, you want to go into any retailer, you have to have a few SKUs on the shelf. Yeah. Otherwise, they're not interested.
I didn't consider that, yeah. So that's the thing. You need to have a bit of a range and have a few things on the shelf. Yeah. Right? You can't just stick one cream in.
Yeah. That was the feedback that we got for sure, yeah. Because I think it took about a year and a half until we had three products. I also personally didn't want to create any product that didn't have a place that wasn't good enough or to confuse the customer too much. So I like keeping it quite streamlined and small, which is why we don't launch products that often. Yeah. They're all very considered. But from a retail perspective, they want to see a bit of a range, a bit of choice. So I think you would need at least three products before they're interested. Unless, again, maybe it's different in other industries, but
that's what you've found out along the way. Mm. I think it leads quite well into what I was going to ask you next anyway. We're talking about product ranges getting larger. You've mentioned at the beginning around this sort of inside-out approach. And obviously the first product was skin specifically. Now you've got supplements added to it as well. So could you maybe talk us through the why of this inside-out approach? How it's worked for you, I guess, as well.
Yeah. It kind of goes back to my own journey in discovering how I could clear my skin once and for all, not, you know, a temporary fix. So part of that was a more gentle approach to skin care and really focusing on your skin barrier health. The other thing was supplementing. So I was working with a nutritionist. She kind of explained to me, because I had other symptoms that I didn't connect to my skin, like bloating, digestive discomfort. So she said, look, you also are dealing with breakouts. So I think your gut health might be the problem here. And I think now people are starting to realize how important your gut health is for everything. Yeah. But even 6-7 years ago, I don't think it was that big of a thing. So that was a big revelation. And she really kind of put me on a protocol with various supplements to help for my skin. So I had this big, you know, tray of 6 or 7 different things that I was taking, but it worked. It had a massive impact on my skin, especially these kind of pesky breakouts, like around the cheek or jawline area, the really stubborn ones that never seem to go away. I think or benefit a lot from a supplement. So I knew that in the back of my mind. I just thought, oh, it's so complex to get into the skincare world. What am I going to do when going into the supplement?
Let alone supplements, exactly.
This must be even harder. Turns out it wasn't actually much harder. It's just about, I guess, figuring out. I found my nutritionist who introduced me to my manufacturer here in the UK, who I love working with. They really focus on quality of ingredients, and they're a family-run business that's been around for over 60 years. So I think that, you know, to be around for that long, you have to do something right. And they're great. So I think I got lucky also in the way that we found our partners, because that's very important when you manufacture product, the trust that you have to have, which is why we make everything in the UK, just, you know, to have it close to home. I lost my train of thought now, or what the question was.
Well, you kind of did answer it. It's like around
the inside-out approach,
right? Yes. Like, and I think it like leads really, you're talking about the manufacturers. I think it would be interesting from my perspective to know like what's the norm, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you're asking me a question. Well, you looked at me like you're asking, I'm not doing the interview.
I don't know. Like, yeah, I was just thinking out loud, like, what is the norm in that, how that's done? You mentioned it being key for yourself, being in the UK. So, like, are a lot of UK skincare brands manufacturing in the UK? Is that a USP for yourself? Like, how do you build on that?
Yeah, it is a USP. Although I think from a consumer perspective, you, when you buy something in the UK, you don't, you just kind of assume it's made in the UK. So I think people, turn, you know, look at the back of your label, see where your products are made, especially with supplements. There were, I mean, I've seen a case this year about a supplement that I think came out of China that was recalled. It was for, it was kids' gummies that contained melatonin. You're not supposed to sell melatonin at all to adults in the UK, let alone to children. Okay. Yeah. And it wasn't on the label. And I think, I don't know what happened, but obviously there's, that's a huge problem.
Lawsuit.
I don't know what I don't know, but it was, it, it, and I was like, yeah, this is why you really want to have that trust with your manufacturer. You want to know exactly what goes into your formula, what quality they use. Is it, in, you know, even when you go a little bit deeper into supplements, what's really important is not just the ingredient, but the form of ingredient and the dosage. So the form means basically how well it is absorbed by your body. A lot of vitamins and minerals, you can get like cheaper forms that aren't as well absorbed by the body. But what's the point? Because you're not going to see the results. Yeah. So this is a important thing that, again, if you, you don't know what you're looking for, you just think, oh, zinc, yeah, just add some zinc. But there are so many different forms of zinc. So you want the one that's well absorbed so you can actually see results. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, where the nutritionist that I work with on these recipes are is great. She taught me a lot. Also, you want the right amount. You don't want too much of something. You don't want too little. And so finding the right balance in formulation, because you're also ingesting it, you know, you want to make sure that you give something good to people. So, I ideally, you know, recommend anyone to make things with just partners that you trust at the end of the day. And I can go and visit my manufacturer. I was there last week. I just told you.
Yeah.
So it's, I can see how everything is made when they're very far away. It's not that simple.
This actually segues pretty nicely into...
It's almost like I was trying to set you up for your question.
He was
when I was looking at you.
Yeah, just absolutely staring me down. Well, it, the moment's happening now, so it does segue nicely to this. So, like, it's quite common, I believe, that a lot of brands might white label a product. First of all, what does that even mean? And like, how common is it? You obviously, we've talked to some length about you spending a lot of time formulating, understanding trusted partners. You're obviously not white labeling, right? You're developing your own formulas, things like that. So yeah, what, I'll just be interested in, like, what's the difference and what does it mean?
It's interesting. I had no idea about this either when I again joined the skincare and supplement space. White labeling is very common. In the vast majority of brands probably do this. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but what it means essentially is that you go to a contract manufacturer, they have a bunch of pre-made formulas that they've made, and you can take that formulation, put your own label on it, and sell it as yours. You can sometimes adjust the formula a little bit, add a bit of fragrance, change ingredients around a little bit, and kind of give it your own twist. I just think that the way I like to formulate is to have control over the formula so we can decide exactly what we put in, what we put out. And also goes back to the quality of ingredients. You can have so many different types of quality, you know, different types of ingredients, different types of quality, where one is really efficacious, the other one is not. But on the back of your label, the ingredient name stays the same. It's kind of the same thing with zinc and that, you know, in your formula. So a good example is always we use a Centella Asiatica extract, which is a plant extract in our serum called the Juice that is wild harvested in Madagascar. So it's grown in the wild, has a very high purity level, has clinical data on it, on the specific, you know, extract, and that's going to ultimately result in a more efficacious product, right? Or at least that's the aim, but yeah. I think it really does totally. Make a big difference.
Yeah.
Same with oils versus refined oils versus cold-pressed oils. So when you white label, you don't have control over that. So you are, yeah, you don't own the formula ultimately. It's not your own IP. But I think the way we like to make our products, it just doesn't align. So whilst it's not necessarily a bad thing, it is, something that I am not the biggest fan of.
I mean, it aligns with your journey, better, right? Like, yeah. If this is personal for you, therefore you want to create the best quality top product you can possibly do.
Mm.
So is it fair to assume, like, if let's say I'm in a Superdrug or a Boots or something like this, the creams from different brands could be the same cream, essentially?
Kind of. And, you know, sometimes I do think... You walk around and you just feel like, oh, another vitamin C serum. Mm. Oh, another vitamin C serum. Oh, another retinol cream. Everyone has kind of the same type of products.
Mm.
And this is also where I think I would like to not create another brand. There's so many brands already in the skincare space. The options are endless. Why would I create another vitamin C serum?
Yeah.
You know, when there are, you know, great ingredients that could function as an alternative, more gentle, because vitamin C can sometimes be a bit irritating. My skin doesn't tolerate it very well.
Mm-hmm.
Same goes for retinoids. But yeah, it could be. You wouldn't be able to tell necessarily always, because sometimes you can tweak the formula a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, okay. It could be all a bit same.
We won't call
same.
Out any names of brands, obviously. But,
no, and yeah. I don't know exactly the names of the brands.
But I think that's the point. And like what you're talking about is it comes to visibility for the consumer of like what's really in it. And even I imagine there's an aspect of if you're white labeling, like you don't have the full visibility of what they've put in there, like, or at least the quality of the product, because you're just seeing what the list anyway, right? So it comes back to visibility. So I think that's really interesting.
Mm.
Maybe to like curve in a bit of a different direction now. I know before the podcast you were talking to us about, and you've mentioned it today as well, like the learning towards e-commerce and that whole side of it. So you picked up the skincare. Now we talk about e-commerce a little bit. You mentioned that you are using Shopify, correct?
Mm-hmm.
But there were other sort of platforms that you looked at when you were learning everything for yourself. What made you in the end decide like, yeah, Shopify is the platform that we're going to go with?
Yeah, this was a big thing that I was researching about, watched a lot of YouTube videos about, especially I think when you look at Shopify, one of the biggest competitors is probably Squarespace. Mm-hmm. And I was deciding between the two. I ultimately think if you are selling a product or in e-commerce, Shopify is the way to go because of the back end and the payment processing. It's so seamless and smooth that I wouldn't go for anything else. The reason why I looked into Squarespace is because at the time, I mean, maybe now it's more comparable, but they were really known for, you know, the ease of design.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just very easy to create a very beautiful website on Squarespace. Whereas Shopify with the themes, it was a little bit more limited in its capabilities. At the time, I think now it's gotten better and you can still design, you know, very beautiful websites with Shopify. But that was what I was deciding between. But ultimately, yeah, if you're selling a product and you don't want you want everything to work very seamlessly on the back end,
yeah,
I think you should go for Shopify.
Nice. Yeah. And you've grown a lot since that decision point, inflection point, and you're still on Shopify. Is the plan to sort of scale the brand with Shopify? Do you see that because you've got the infrastructure behind the scenes and, like you say, developing the front end and having all this optionality, that will be the long-term plan?
Yeah. I don't.
Nice.
There's no reason for me to switch. I don't really know what I could want more.
Yeah.
Unless there's something.
There's a little that I'm not aware of. Shopify.
Yes. I don't know what else I could want. I think just we're on still a basic plan. So the option is now: do we go on Shopify Plus?
Yeah.
Even more capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's also interesting. I mean, I think they all offer competitive rates, but I remember thinking when I started with Shopify, oh, this is not that expensive a month to begin with.
Yeah.
It really isn't a make or break on the fee.
They are very good, I think, at, you know, they've got price point for entry level, they've got the infrastructure for entry level, and I think they're just typically really good at as a scaling with a brand.
Yeah.
And obviously the price point does increase, but obviously you're making more revenue as you scale. You unlock more features and things like that. Mm. I mean, going to the Squarespace thing, I don't know any brands that are on like big, like growing or slightly bigger brands on Squarespace as well. So I feel like you would have naturally hit some limitations there if you did go down that route.
That's my impression at least as well. Is like you talk about this inflection point now of moving to Plus, and I think particularly like when we look at the market currently of Shopify Plus versus any other platform, let alone a Squarespace, I think definitely the scaling point and is one of the strengths of Shopify for sure. And I think with Plus, like it's really interesting, you already mentioned the benefits of payments and things like that, so you get even better with that. But the checkout customization stuff is a side project I'm like super into at the moment. It's really interesting stuff, so definitely look at it.
I know there's the free trial that I can take as an option. But I do think, it's so busy also right now, obviously. We're pretty much November, so biggest time of the year for e-commerce brands. And I think when you tackle, you know, the checkout, you kind of have to have a little bit of a plan.
Sure.
Right now, we haven't been able to think about anything. So, yeah, when the time is right, I think sometime next year we'll switch.
Nice. Yeah. Cool. And I guess another benefit of Shopify is the ecosystem. You have a subscription arm to your brand. Mm. I'd love to know, while we're on this sort of tech tracks topic, like how, again, did you select a solution to help you with that? How is it scaled? How's the subscription model treating your brand in general?
It's funny. I joined Shopify and very early on, someone just said to me, you should add a subscription option for when people want to subscribe to the, you know, to your products on skincare. Obviously, it's a replenishable product or a perishable product.
Yeah.
I don't know how you say that. But I thought, okay, yeah, sure. Why not? So I kind of looked at, you know, in the integrations, like what are the options? Found Recharge, added it, didn't think anything of it. Fast forward a few years later when we launched our supplement, all of a sudden, our subscribers started to ramp up very, very quickly. I realize now that, of course, it's hard to know exactly when you run out of your skincare product, but you know exactly when you're going to run out of your supplement. So it's much more convenient because it's a bit of a, annoying thing to have to go every 4 weeks and order something on a website.
Yeah, and then you forget and then you stop treatment for a few days or even longer.
Exactly. So when we launched our supplement, the first supplement, which was only March 2024, all of a sudden that became very important very quickly. So a few months after that, also Recharge emailed us and they were like, you know, you have, you know, 1,000 subscribers. Do you want to have a chat about our capability?
Yeah.
So we
can
did
get more out of it, kind of thing.
Yeah, I never looked at it.
Yeah.
It was, I was like, oh, really? We do? I was so naive. I had the world of subscribers was just not something I was familiar with because I think with skincare, people just subscribe a bit less. With supplements, it goes very well hand in hand. So we got on a phone call with them. They explained all the stuff we could do that we weren't using. Eventually, we jumped on like a higher, more, you know, advanced plan with them. And yeah, it's been great. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. It must be really useful as well for you, like, you know, forecasting revenue, knowing, you know, you now know that you've got X amount of money coming in. It's a bit more easy for planning.
The recurring revenue.
Yeah, the recurring revenue.
Yeah. I mean, that's why this year it was a big part of our strategy to do an overhaul of our subscription for the supplements. Because, it is, you know, from a commercial point of view, very nice to know how many people you have on a subscription equals that amount of revenue that comes in. And also just you can kind of keep the customer a bit close. There's a lot of things like mystery gifts you can unlock along the way.
You can treat them, you know, treat your VIPs, you know.
Give them special codes, discounts, offers. So I think you have a little bit of a closer bond with your customer that way as well.
Totally. Recharge is great for that. And actually, it was, as you were talking about skincare and supplement differences, of course, it makes much more sense to be on a subscription for supplements, but actually because of the things you can build around it with the gifting or like at certain time periods, like introducing the skincare products, it actually allows you to build like a full routine for them that actually suits their skincare journey, right? So
yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah, very cool.
So I'm gonna ask this question now because we are literally around the corner from Black Friday. I mean, I'm surprised I've got you in here for this, being so close. Every brand in the next kind of 2 or 3 weeks are probably going to be, well, maybe not every brand. We have spoken to brands who don't do Black Friday, but a lot of people, a lot. Some people don't do it. I'll say like maybe 10% of our guests have said they don't do it, something like this. I'm sure our listeners would love to hear about what you're planning for Black Friday, what you typically have done in the past. And 2 weeks out, what's going on?
Yeah. We have done Black Friday pretty much every year other than the year that we launched the brand. Because it's quite stressful. I mean, if you don't do Black Friday, that's like a lot of less stress. For us, last year was quite an interesting year. I think it was the first time I noticed that around Black Friday, a 20% off just didn't seem enough anymore. Yep. I think because brands discount so much throughout the year, we don't do that. We never do 20% off. If we do something, it's 15% off. So this is the biggest sale of the year for us, or the biggest discount that we offer. However, so many brands discount every single month so much that I think that just a simple 20% off just sounds not super enticing to someone anymore. And so I thought about this upon reflection, that what can we do to make it more special? So this year, what we've done, we've created a limited edition wash bag or wash pouch, like travel bag, that we have a limited, you know, stock off. You can only get it now this year with a certain spend over a certain amount. You get it for free, basically. Alongside the 20% off, we do 25% off bundles. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have a special Black Friday bundle that we're creating as well. But I think that is the first year we do something like that. So I'm very curious to see how it's going to resonate. But I do think it makes it a little bit more special, and you can offer something unique that's only around now, essentially.
Definitely. I've actually heard from previous guests, a couple of them have done a similar thing, and they said it was very successful.
Okay.
Not getting your hopes up too much. So if it was a flop, don't blame me. But I've heard like a specific limited thing in a time period is pretty successful. And obviously, you've got dedicated customers, I'm sure, that these kind of profile of people would love to get their hands on a limited edition wash bag.
Mm. Yeah. And also I think that our assortment, it's more for either self-gifting or gifting. We have like a hair oil that's really nice that could work well as a gift to someone else. But I think the wash bag also makes it a more giftable product instead of just saying here's a serum, unless you have that on your wish list
quite well, I think.
Exactly.
To give them skincare, right?
Yes. Let alone a supplement.
Yeah.
So that's really for yourself. Right. Or if you know that someone specifically asked for this product. But I think the wash bag does add a nice, more like, you know, present gift type of feel. We're not, you know, if you're a jewelry brand or, I don't know, even cosmetics, I think like lipsticks and things like that are much more typically considered giftable items compared to maybe, you know, skincare. It can be very personal, supplements. Totally. So Yeah, I think that's a nice touch there as well.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head with the discounting thing not being enough or consumers' expectations changing. I've spoken to a bunch of brands around like the fear almost in consumers that there's going to be a better discount and that brands aren't being transparent when they say, hey, we've got this great new offer because Black Friday's coming up. And then you check back a week, okay, great, I'll use it, do my purchase at 20%. And then another one comes out a week later of 30%, you
know, or 40%. That's happened to me personally.
Yeah. And so people are a bit sick of it. And it's kind of like you really have to get your branding and transparency hopefully right.
Yeah.
Rather than like just adding discounts on for the sake of it.
And there's a common strategy. So brands that I kind of mentioned to maybe don't go all in on Black Friday, something that commonly I see them do is like they'll only discount slow moving products, right? And maybe this is typically my fashion, you know, products that don't sell as well, they put them a discount to shift the stock and stuff like that. Whereas the products which are their hero products, their best sellers, they don't discount because they have confidence that they know it's going to sell anyway, right?
Mm.
Why discount something that you know is going to sell and stuff like that? So,
Yeah. I don't like the idea of giving people a discount and then, to your point, a few weeks later or a week later, you go in with a steeper discount.
Yeah.
Or I think we just, the offer stays the same for us.
Yeah,
we're not changing it. Yeah. But I think we are doing something different than last year, at least, you know, for us, we're doing with the bag.
And it still drives urgency. Because it's limited edition, they need to buy now to get it. Like, simple as that.
It will run out.
Yeah.
And it's never coming back.
Never. So. Best not bring it back next year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you guys are selling presumably in multiple markets in, you know, Europe, the UK. Where else are you selling? Anywhere else?
US a little bit.
Yeah.
France. And we just launched in the Netherlands, so which is where I'm from.
In the home country.
Yeah, the home country.
Yes.
How have you found expanding into different territories? Has it been difficult, challenging, or what's your learnings?
It's interesting from day one. As small as the brand was initially, we've always had sort of an international appeal. Mm. We have always had an international customer. I mean, we ship products to Greenland.
That's pretty rogue.
I know, I love it when I see an order to Greenland. Because the person who fulfills the orders does always message me. She's like, oh, another one to Greenland.
Greenland again.
And I don't know why, but yeah, we've always had, the brands resonated quite internationally. I think ultimately when you are dealing with skin issues, it's kind of universal.
Yeah.
Whether you're dealing with a breakout in the States or Australia, it's still...
That's a great point, actually.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, we started, you know, just direct-to-consumer, selling only on our website, and then slowly started to expand with other retail partners. And we say also no quite a lot, because I've realized that when you go into retail... they have an expectation that you are going to also help sell the product. So in order to do that, you need to be able to dedicate enough attention and time, mm-hmm. resources to each partnership. So there, I would, you know, recommend to anyone wanting to expand into retail, just know that there is an expectation. Of course, they will push the product, but there is an expectation that you have to also help as the brand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you can't just sell it and then think, okay, great.
Yeah.
When's the next order coming through? When are you sending me another PO? Yeah. And I think what we've seen over the years is the more we grow our own brand, it has this sort of knock-on effect with the retailers. So you have to find the right balance. You have to divide your attention well.
Yeah.
So we are expanding slowly, but really trying to find the right partners, not too quick, not too fast. And also find partners where you know that their audience, their customer, is going to resonate with a brand like yours. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, it's not going to sell. No one's going to be happy. It's just going to go nowhere. So,
do you fulfill? You only fulfill from the UK at the minute, right?
Mm, yeah.
So for the US, you obviously ship from here.
Yeah.
Presumably, if you know. I don't know if this is on your roadmap or if you've got a couple of territories you're in your mind, you're like, this is going to be great. But presumably if it takes off there, you would have to, do you see yourself having to open up fulfillment operations in that country, or do you think you can keep fulfilling and doing that kind of stuff from the UK for a while?
I'd like to do it from the UK as long as possible, but interestingly, the US is right behind our UK, you know, customer, the biggest audience that we have. So I think I wouldn't be surprised if one day we're even bigger in the States than we are in the UK.
There's more people, so.
More people, and the brand seems to, again, really resonate very well. People say, oh, America's so expensive, but for us so far, it's not been like that expensive.
Mm-hmm. In the US, are you seen as like, I'm curious, like, are you seen as, a British brand, a British skincare?
I don't know. Yeah, I think so.
I'm curious if that's, because they love, maybe I'm just stereotyping again, but like, I feel like Americans love British things.
Like, yeah, I think they're more open and interested in trying things from other countries. Mm-hmm. Whereas, when's the last time you ordered something from the US?
Literally never.
Yeah.
I never get anything.
It has to be, it has to be something that you've thought about, you really, you know, are sure you want to get it. You can only get it from there. But that's why I think, American, like, sentiment is great. Mm-hmm. That they're so open to try different things. And I'm sure it's a bottleneck for some people when they say, oh, shipping in the US, from the UK.
Yeah.
But it's fast. It's really, I was talking to someone in the States, and she bought a couple of products, and she was like amazed how quickly it arrived.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's really good. Mm. As we start to wrap up, I was just curious, like, that sounds like it's almost a work in progress. The international expansion is obviously going to be an ongoing thing, but what is next for Monday Muse? Like, what's the next expansion area?
I think the US.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next year, I already know that we have to create two different marketing calendars, mm-hmm. one for the UK, one for the US. Just take it more seriously, you know, try to really figure out, okay, localize how are we going to tackle that? Which is why I'm not opposed to eventually doing fulfillment.
Well, if there's the demand there, then it's worth it, right? But you're completely right that it has to be, you don't want to do it too soon. Because you just, you know, if the demand isn't there, isn't set already, you're going to bleed money, and it can make or break, expire. You know, we spoke to brands who have gone too early into a market, and then it kind of ruins that market altogether because they've had to pull out, then they have to rebuild here, and then it puts them back years.
You've got the benefit, I suppose, of having built a pretty good customer base there already and kind of just launching off that growth. Yeah. But yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah.
What about tariffs? Like, has that changed things from a D2C perspective? It sounds like not as much for you because your customers are still getting it quickly. They're happy. Like, how are you solving that?
Yeah. I am surprised by how relatively smooth that's gone for us. We make our products in the UK. Mm-hmm. So we, out of all the tariffs you can get, 10% is, the best deal.
Pretty sweet.
Possible. Yeah. So another reason why you should manufacture in the UK if you want to sell in the US. But that wasn't too big of a problem. And I think also the shipping companies have good relations with the States. I think England and the UK and US have good trade contracts in general. So it was a pretty seamless transition. It wasn't as crazy as I've seen in other countries where they had to close off the shipping to other countries or to the US from their country, or the tariff issue. We just make sure it's covered from our side, so there's no having to wait and having to pay a couple dollars, $5.
That makes a huge difference. Even like when I've ordered some stuff from Europe, when it's just, I know it's included and it's just going to arrive, there's no hidden costs. That can make or break my decision to buy something easily.
Yeah.
So the fact that you guys are covering that is, I'm sure it makes a big difference.
Yeah. And brands are starting to do that, but that's the issue, right? It's like getting... so expensive for the brand to kind of incorporate that cost.
Well, you have to, you have to kind of like take that into consideration for your margins and
big time.
All those things.
Yeah. Luckily, as you touched on, like, it's all about country of origin, right? And manufacturing here kind of solves it for you. So
yeah.
It's always good to hear.
Yeah, that worked out. And I'm from the Netherlands originally. Maybe if I would have started the brand in Europe, the tariff would have been higher in that sense. So it's just ended up, you know.
You've heard it first. The UK is better than the Netherlands. Straight from a fellow
from
Netherlands.
From a tariff perspective, yes. Maybe not other things, but No, it's it worked out so far. We were a bit nervous. Like, how is this going to go? Are people going to stop buying? You know, is it going to drop off a cliff? But no, it hasn't. It's business as usual. So
amazing.
I think, which is also important, obviously, to see for us, if we do want to expand in the States and take it more seriously next year. There are some more, I think, retail expansions we have to do. But everything is done very considered, because you can go too fast, too quickly. And I think it is also important to focus on one market at a time.
Yeah.
And with Europe, obviously, having so many different countries, it can make it trickier to can't tackle the whole of Europe with the same strategy.
Yeah.
So I think, we're going to focus on the US predominantly, besides the UK, of course. Keep growing the brand.
Amazing.
Nice. And just quickly wrapping up, last thing, quick fire, what's your favorite brand to shop at the minute? And you can't say Monday Muse.
Do you mean skincare? Like
anything you want,
There's this brand, I've never bought from them, but I've been following this company for a while. I love just how the founder, she's I think Australian originally, but she's grown the brand in the US. It's called Etoile, and it's a makeup kind of accessories brand. I think the clever thing that they've done is that the inside of the makeup bag can get quite dirty. I mean, I don't know, you probably don't have that problem with your lipsticks and your mascara and whatever, but that can get quite dirty, and they have a very easy way to clean that.
Right.
But besides the functionality of the product, I just love the art direction, the way she's grown the brand. Look at their Instagram. Everything about it, I think, is so thoughtfully and nicely done. Nice. I would say that brand's been on my mind to
check it out. All the listeners, check it out.
Well.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to wrap up now, do a quick outro. So this episode has been sponsored by Cubic Shopify Plus Agency, and it is presented by Knotted Commerce Integrations. So, thanks for coming on, Loon. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you.
Likewise.
Yeah, really, really interesting kind of story. I think particularly a lot of listeners who are at that early stage of a brand can take a lot away from your kind of story here. So, thanks for coming on.
It's hard, but keep going, guys.
You've got it. That's the message.
Yes, exactly.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.